Okay, good evening everybody and welcome to this evening's teleseminar called The Ultimate Spiritual Way. My name is Damien Sen and it's a great pleasure to have you on the call this evening. In a few moments from now I'll be introducing our very special guest John C. Parkin, but before I do, please allow me to share how this call will work this evening, particularly if this is your first PeopleYouShouldMeet.com call that you've tuned into. Now, we're going to be on the call for around about an hour, and over the course of the hour, I'll be asking John a whole series of questions on our topic. Some of the questions will be my own, but the vast majority of questions will have actually been submitted in through the website by you, our listeners. Now, I first came to know about John's work through two very good friends of mine, Clive and Sham, and I had the good fortune of actually attending a lecture that John delivered probably 3 months ago or so at the Mind, Body, Spirit Festival here in London, and I was actually totally captivated by his story and his journey and also his approach, the fuck it philosophy, which we will be learning a little bit more about later on in the call. Now, I've also had the very good fortune of actually delving into the work as well. Like, John is the author of two books, Fuck It, The Ultimate Spiritual Way and The Way of Fuck It. And I've recently just read both of the books, and they're both stunning in their profanity, but also in their profundity, if that's a word. They're really a really quite special collection of thoughts, ideas on how to live a powerful and spiritual and most of all happy and free life. Now, John is the son of Anglican preachers. He's studied and practiced systems of Eastern wisdom for over 20 years now. He founded the Holistic Centre, The Hill That Breathes in Italy, where he teaches regular Fuck It Weeks, and he also writes a regular blog on his website, thefuckitway.com. So, yeah, it gives me great pleasure to welcome to the call this evening our very special guest, John C. Parkin. Hey there, John.
Hi, Damien. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Welcome. Now, I was just wondering, John, if we could actually start off by sharing what exactly is the Fuck It philosophy and why is it the ultimate spiritual way?
Sure. The philosophy, well, what I like about this phrase, and we started using it about, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago, is that when you say to people, we're teaching this thing called Fuck It and it's a philosophy, it's spiritual, a lot of people get it straight away because we realize that in our language, when we say fuck it to things, we're actually kind of giving up on things that are causing us pain. We're sometimes going for things that we wouldn't normally do. We're scared of, and we finally decide to go for it. So, what we did about 7 or 8 years ago was kind of realize that this thing we were saying every day to help us release and kind of and relax, fuck it, was actually spiritual. So. That's why we created it as the juxtaposition of fuck it and spiritual. Whether it's the ultimate spiritual way, I was being slightly facetious when I named the book like that, because I love all the religions that think they're their only way and the ultimate way.
Right.
So I was partly kind of creating the idea to suggest that people should only follow the fuck it way, where that clearly is facetious. But it's a pretty good spiritual way. Because especially for us now in the West, where we're tired and stressed out and in pain a lot of the time, and when life's quite tough, rather than talking about the kind of classic spiritual stuff, just to have something really quick and sharp and powerful to say can be really good, and it does put you in touch with this whatever the spiritual stuff is.
Mm.
So yeah, it's the ultimate. But I was being slightly silly too.
Yeah. I thought you may have actually got the sign, seal and approval from God himself in terms of the hierarchy of spiritual practices.
Yeah, he did, but God's quite easy, to be honest. It's harder to get a trademark on things than it is to get God's approval. It just takes a little bit of meditation with your hands placed flat together, kneeling next to a bed, and God answers very quickly. It's quite amazing, really.
Yeah.
And he must have thousands of calls at the same time, but he's running a hell of a teleseminar, I think.
Awesome. Now, I was just wondering if you could actually share a little bit more about your journey, John, because it is a fascinating journey, and just, I guess, the whole process to really coming to realizing this work and then actually going out there and sharing it.
Sure. Well, it's funny, you know, when I wrote the book originally and when I started to think about how to phrase my story, it's funny how you can pick on so many different things in your life to kind of make links about or to talk about. I mean, the kind of one key part of my story really is that I wasn't very well. As a child, I wasn't very well. I suffered from, I was very allergic to a lot of stuff and had the kind of accompanying symptoms of mainly asthma and eczema as a kid. And I had those symptoms again that kind of came back in my late teens. So as an adult, I was doing my thing. I was doing my job in the media, but I wasn't so well. I had a kind of chronic illness that wasn't, I mean, I wasn't terribly ill, but I didn't look so great. I didn't sleep so well. I felt tired and sick a lot of the time. So my story really has been pretty dominated by illness until about 5 or 6 years ago. And so my interest in a lot of the spiritual stuff and so the alternative therapies and a lot of the Eastern philosophies and the ideas of meditation, the practice of things like Tai Chi, came from a desire to be better, really, in a kind of basic way. And also a recognition that my illness was caused by, or at least exacerbated by, tension. So I realized that when I relaxed around anything, it would actually make me feel a bit better. And so a lot of my story was about that. I mean, my journey into a lot of the things I was doing. I became an expert on relaxation techniques, really. I spent 20 years doing Qigong, which is the Chinese energy art. I trained to be a hypnotherapist. I spent hours meditating. There were patches when I was particularly ill where I'd spend 2 hours in the morning doing Tai Chi and various meditations and an hour each evening. And also then on the spiritual search. So that was the driving force of my story, really. And that culminated in giving up the job and just wanting to find a place where we could kind of do what we fancied and be in nature and be able to relax more and also share some of the stuff that we'd learnt with other people. So in about 2001, 2002, we came over to Italy and found a place to set up a retreat centre, The Hill That Breathes. That's kind of what happened to that point. And we came out here, and it was pretty tough, actually. The idea of finding a place to relax was kind of the opposite. Even setting up a relaxation centre had immense stresses for a couple of years, renovating a house and setting up a new business with young children. So it was all pretty tough. And during that first summer, so when we opened, I think it was about 2004, and I was teaching. We were teaching weeks here, and I was teaching about letting go and relaxing and giving up on stuff. So the kind of almost classic Eastern ideas around relaxation and letting go. And I found myself actually more sick than I'd been for years. So
wow.
I'd followed this path to a completely different country. I'd left my job. We'd uprooted the family. We'd set up something spectacular, an amazing center in this kind of paradise that we live in here in the hills. And I was more sick. So I pursued something, this idea of, okay, if I do that, I will be well. You know, the kind of the holistic idea of being fully whole and well. And I ended up finding myself more sick. And so there was one point in September, I think, towards the end of the summer, September or October, and I just, I was standing in the bathroom and just feeling really ill. And I thought, oh my God, what have I done? I'm actually worse than I've been for years. We've done all this. What the hell have I done? And then I realized that actually my life wasn't so bad. In fact, it was probably pretty good. I was pretty lucky. We had, you know, got my kids and Gaia and a nice place here. and that maybe I didn't have to be completely well to be okay now, that I was actually putting off enjoying now for the sake of this idea that one day I could be completely healthy and completely well, and that's when everything would fall into place, and then I could come. That would be happiness. That would be it for me. So in that moment, I said, okay, effectively, I said, fuck it to the idea of myself being well. I gave up on the idea of my being completely well. And I just thought, okay, that's it. I'm not so sick. I can manage. I can exist like this, and I've actually got quite a nice life. So I completely gave up on the idea of being well. And 1 week later, I started to get a bit better. I noticed that I was a bit better, and about a month later, I was significantly better. And within a year, I was completely better, just about. And have remained well ever since. It's and quite astonishing. So the letting go, you know, the true letting go, not the kind of the letting go that you think you should do, not the letting go because I think it will work, the actually authentic, true, that I can't go anywhere with this letting go works in miraculous ways in lots of areas in my life, but that's the most significant way it worked for me in terms of, oh, fuck it, I'm ill, that's it.
Well, it's amazing. Because you often hear people on the spiritual path reading these kind of crisis points and then, I guess, emerging through them and coming to, like, total new levels of realization. And it's just very, very profound to hear you share your story and then to actually move through it.
It does seem to be the case, doesn't it, that, a lot of the significant spiritual teachers do have those kind of really, really down patches. Something significant happens. Another part of my kind of realization of what's going on was a real down patch I had a couple of years earlier when we'd been looking for this place here in Italy, and then we went back to London for a year in the end, actually. And going back into London after being on the beach in Italy was pretty depressing on any level, but we were driving back into kind of on November the 5th it was, and it was raining and it was dark all day long, and I had the prospect of having to work again to earn some money before we set this place up, and I was becoming rapidly more sick. So I'd been relatively well during the summer because of the sunshine, and I was becoming sick, and I just went into a depression. And I hadn't before that really suffered from depression. And thank God I haven't since. But I went into this deep hole where I just couldn't understand how anybody could see any meaning in life. I really couldn't understand it. I couldn't get it, how you could find any joy in anything in life at all. And it culminated in me sitting on the tube, and we're going up to a workshop, actually, that my wife thought would do me some good. And I was sitting on the tube, and I was sobbing like a baby. I was just crying my eyes out. And everybody was looking, I was really, really, really crying. And I just had this realization that I did not care what anybody thought of me on that tube or in my life. I didn't care if anybody knew that I was having a tough time, if I was depressed, whereas before I would have found it difficult to talk about if I was having a tough time. So in that moment, in that absolute deep moment of just sobbing my eyes out, I had this sensation of not caring a toss what anybody thought of me. And I recognized in that moment that it was a massive release at some level. It was an incredible release of all these years of this burden of, like, you know, doing what people thought, wondering what people would think if I did this or if I did that, what my career path is, and, you know, I've got to behave, I've got to do this, I've got to be good for my family, the whole list. It just disappeared. I did not care about anything, and I didn't care what people thought of me. And even though it was a real dark patch, there was a massive sense of freedom there. I thought, my God, if I ever come out of this and I can keep this sense of freedom, I'm going to be in a good way. And it kind of happened. I mean, you shift in and out of it, but it kind of happened that sense of freedom, and including what people think of me, has remained. Mm. So, the crisis, I think my sense is you can take anything that happens and anything that occurs in your life, and just take it as, okay, that is meant to be happening to me. It's not this is a kind of interlude for the period when I'm going to be happy. This is meant to be happening, and there's something I can take from that. And there's something very, very powerful to learn from it, because that's exactly how it is. And it does seem, for a lot of us, to create, you know, tremendous, whatever it is, growth and insight.
Absolutely. I think that's very profound, just not actually fighting with reality and just accepting everything as it is and actually moving with life. It does seem to be the real doorway to personal freedom.
It does, doesn't it? I mean, there's one definition of pain. I think it's Krishnamurti defines pain as very simply as the non-acceptance of reality as it is. Mm. And it's like, oh my God, because all of it, we don't really want pain. Okay, that's the key there. There's a little key to the truth in there. Mm. Pain is the non-acceptance of reality. So if I accepted things just as they are, everything just as it is, completely accepted, not just kind of sat there and go, yes, I accept it. I accept the fact that I'm in a terrible relationship and I hate my job. I completely accept. That's a kind of passive, a kind of rubbish giving up, as far as I can see. But a kind of acceptance of just, this is life. This is life as it is in every single way. And then a flowing with that. And that might mean a flowing out of it. So this is the difficulty about the acceptance conversation. Because I don't want to, if I'm in a rubbish job, I don't just want to go, I accept everything, I accept my rubbish job. I want to go, okay, this is the reality, this is my situation. My situation is this rubbish job. I need to be in another job. I need to be out of here. And that's the kind of, you then give up on it and you go, I don't know how I'm going to be out of here, but I need to get out of here. and things like fuck it can actually help that process then.
Mm, absolutely. Now, as I mentioned in the intro, John, like, you're the son of two Anglican preachers, and I was just wondering what your friends and family thought of you writing a book called Fuck It.
I don't know whether they've read it. I think they've probably read the recent book, because it's quicker. But yeah. The first one, I don't think. I mean, my whole family is very Christian, and my upbringing was in a Christian family. With my parents were lay preachers, so they'd do other things during the week, but every evening they'd be practicing sermons in the bathroom, and then at the weekend they'd be wandering around various churches talking, and not talking as in chatting, they were actually speaking in terms of the sermons. So it was a kind of interesting environment, the kind of constant, the idea of evangelizing and showing people how to live and how it is. And there's a lot of course, judgment as well around what's right and what's wrong. So a lot of judgment around what was wrong. And yes, it's true. What we've been doing is judged as wrong. Though I have to say, in the last couple of years, I think my parents in particular have softened around it. I don't know why, but they softened around what we do here and at the Hill That Breathes and around the fuck it thing as well.
Mm.
Perhaps it's just anything, you just say it enough times, it begins to lose it loses its shot. Which is what I mean, it's, in a way, that's why this book is this book and the use of the F word is good now. It's perfect in the history of our language. 10 years ago, I think it would have been very, very difficult to publish something called Fuck It. Even if you'd put how many, 6 asterisks in there and got people to guess what it was, it would have been impossible. Whereas now, you can put it out there. In newspapers, on the telly, people do use the F word, but it's still got enough power to affect people, and that's the point of this saying "fuck it." Really, it's powerful enough to be different to when we say, "Oh, I really need to relax. I really need to let go. Or, you know, I really need to let go of that thing that's causing me pain." The actual F word has got enough power to give it a kind of strength that it works more. In fact, there's a survey done, I think, by a professor at the University of Kiel earlier this summer about the actual power of the F word. They basically got, I think he was getting people to stick their hands in ice cold water, and then they were saying various things to see whether it affected their tolerance of pain. And the people who were going, ow, fuck, 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 actually were able to take more pain. So the F word is a pain, literally, when you use the F word, it's a painkiller.
Well,
so I can't remember what the explanation of it, whether it's producing more endorphins. But at a physical at physiological level, using the F word has an effect.
Wow.
It's amazing. So
that's amazing research.
I mean, we're talking more of a philosophical, I suppose, level, but or kind of the more abstract pain of situations that we don't like. But it's still great for using if you hammer the nail into your thumb.
Mm. all the paracetamol companies, you know, they certainly wouldn't want to hear that.
Well, cool. they'll just start to. They can actually use. Well,
they could actually start printing
"fuck" on the paracetamols and say it's now twice as effective, and they can charge twice as much.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, the instruction leaflet, the instruction leaflets that they have in the paracetamol packages will just be directions: take one tablet after a meal and say "fuck, fuck, fuck, fuck."
Brilliant. Now, also, I'm very fascinated, John, about the Heal That Breathes. You actually run regular Fuck It Weeks, and I'm just wondering, you know, what actually goes on in a Fuck It Week? Like, what kind of teachings do people experience, and what are they looking for, and what do they get?
Sure. People, in the end, the common denominator is that people are looking to relax more, usually. I mean, what we do on the weeks, we first kind of examine why we have to say something like "fuck it" in the first place, because the truth is that most of us and most people that come on the weeks are suffering from modern living, right? Working too hard, having to juggle too many things, trying to be good at loads of things in our lives, working out and working on the career, trying to find the right relationship, the whole list. So this whole massive list of things that we're trying to perform in, and it just makes us exhausted and often stressed to the point of anxiety and panic attacks. So what we're looking at, first of all, is why we get to the point where we have to say something like "fuck it." And I think the truth is that what happens is that we get out of sync with nature and our nature. So we stop listening to what we fancy. We stop listening to our natural kind of instinct, that our natural rhythms of when to go to sleep, for example. Mm. We stop listening to our instinct. And so when we get out of sync with ourselves and with nature, we're all over the place. And "fuck it" is kind of getting us back into ourselves, or into a kind of a place where we can listen to ourselves, put ourselves first sometimes. Because a lot of them, we actually get about, I don't know, 25% of people that come on the weeks are people in really caring professions. I don't know, it's not officially the term "really caring professions," it's just caring professions. So social workers and nurses. And so a whole range of people who actually have devoted their lives to helping other people. And they all come saying exactly the same thing, which is, I am absolutely exhausted and I need to focus on myself again. Mm. And bring some attention to myself. So the process then through the week is a combination. I mean, it's hard to sum up, and actually the weeks are all different anyway, but it's a combination of talking about what's going on. It's learning relaxation exercises. It's learning Qigong, which is the working with energy, which in itself is a kind of the ancient Chinese energy art of Qigong is a fuck it art. Because it's all about relaxing and relaxing and relaxing. And when you relax, the energy flows. And that's what happens here. When we relax out of the stress and the tension, the energy in our life starts to flow and things start to work. And when you relax in your own body, your energy starts to flow and you become well. So that's the week. People come into it wanting, I mean, different things, but it's usually about relaxing. And people are kind of learning in the week how to listen to themselves and then enact that in life. So listen to themselves, put a lot more importance on what they feel, and then work out ways to make that happen in their lives. And in the end, just to go with the flow of life more rather than constantly being dictated by what other people want of them and what they think they should be doing in life rather than what they feel like doing. And so a lot of people do go away. I mean, the headline story is that people go away and they leave their jobs and they go traveling, and people do leave relationships and get divorced, and other people come and they suddenly open to a great relationship happening, and that happens for them. Other people who we're trying to conceive and have them suddenly go away. They go away. We've got plenty of babies that have been conceived at the Hill That Breathes. So miracles happen. Amazing things happen here during those weeks. But it's not about us teaching. Me and Guy are teaching. It's about creating this space where people finally kind of go, okay, I don't have to struggle anymore. Because life's all about struggle. I don't have to struggle anymore. Mm. It could be easy. I could believe that things are okay, no matter what I'm feeling in every single moment. And I'm just going to go with it. You know, that's what Fuck It is about. It's about going, sometimes it's about letting go and giving up on things that are causing us pain. And other times it's doing the opposite. It's about going, fuck it, no. It's the middle of a recession, and I've got this great idea for a spherical Rubik's Cube that I'll call the Rubik's Sphere, and I'm going to do it. I'm going to borrow $5,000 from the bank, and I'm going to do it. So it's the two ways. Mm. You basically, once you do almost like lie back into the flow of life, it can go lots of different ways. So it's beautiful. They're beautiful weeks. And it is great to teach. I mean, it's clearly nice to write a book and for people to read the book. I mean, I get so many emails. I get about 5 emails a day from people who've read the book and whose lives have, you know, changed in either a small or a big way. But it's lovely to be with people for a full week as well and to share that time.
Absolutely. Now, have you found, John, that anyone can become a fucketeer, or do you need to be born with special skills or abilities?
Anybody can. I mean, even we get quite a lot of people who are actually quite scared of saying the F word. I have some very funny conversations on the phone when people are inquiring about booking the week of quite posh ladies, usually. They're saying, I'm inquiring about the week September the 23rd to the 30th. I says, which week is it? It's a week about letting go. which week is it? I just need to check it in the diary. So I'm desperate for them to say it. It's the fuck it week. So just say, you know, for people that find it very difficult to say it, that in itself is incredibly releasing. And we get people that come and say at the beginning of the week, they'll sit there and they'll say, I really don't like this F word. I think it's a vulgar word, and it's overused in society. And it demonstrates a complete lack of imagination to be using this word. Oh, fuck it, let's move on then.
it reminds me of one of my favourite sayings, is that the actual workshop begins as soon as you book on it.
Yep.
It certainly seems like the work there to be done begins with actually booking on it, for sure.
It's absolutely true. And, you know, even when people are here, because there's about 4 hours of teaching, 2 hours in the morning, 2 hours in the afternoon, and what we say is the whole week is the week. Mm. So every single thing that happens during this week, whoever you sit next to at the dinner table, you know, what happens in the, you know, a plane that flies over when you're at the pool has something for you. And if you kind of learn that during a kind of a retreat time, like the week that people have here, you can then spread it out into your life, because that's the case with our lives, isn't it? Once you do relax, and then you open, you suddenly see that there's something in almost everything there. It's like everything becomes a metaphor for you.
Mm.
Everything becomes a kind of a very powerful message, almost as if everything has been put on just for me, mm. as if I am the center of the universe and everything is just a play just for me.
Mm.
I mean, the truth is, I mean, it's kind of almost opposite. The truth is probably that I don't exist and I am just the universe, which doesn't sound any less egocentric, really. So I go from being the center of the universe to being the whole universe. But most of us are lost somewhere in between, with a kind of feeling pretty crap about ourselves and pretty insignificant about, unsure about our role in the universe.
Mm.
I am at the center of it, and I am the universe. And that's why if you kind of just lie back and start to look around, and that, you know, I mean, a lot of people talk about this, don't they, and the people who've got on the spiritual journey will talk about the astonishing coincidences that happen. And that's one of the most beautiful things that happen, you know, the amazing things that start to happen when you do start to open your eyes.
Mm. Absolutely.
And who knows what they are?
Yeah, the whole... whole magical universe is always corresponding with us and sending us information and guiding us. And when you sort of have that open view of life, life comes alive and everything he's speaking to, it's certainly a magical way of being.
Yeah.
Awesome. Great, John. Well, I mentioned earlier on in the call that we've had lots of questions actually being submitted in from people all around the world, and I thought I might just ask a few of those now. And I'm actually going to kick you off with a question from Dave in the UK. And Dave asks, is there anything you can't, dan't, wouldn't say a fuck it to?
Well, there's lots of things that I can't, dan't, or probably wouldn't do in life. I wouldn't do stupid things. I wouldn't just kind of go fuck it and then do something stupid. But I suppose, I mean, what fuck it is, and this is clearly about the interpretation of fuck it, what fuck it is for me is tuning in to what I want. So that, I mean, I'm sorry for using that word flow. It's a little bit, it could be for me a little bit overused, but I tune into my flow and then I tune into the flow of life, of what's happening, you know, how things are working, how things are moving now. And if I define fuck it as that, and that's how I see it, sometimes I give up on something that's not working. Sometimes I stop doing something that I thought I really had to do. And sometimes something comes out of the blue and I really chase it and I really go for it. So if that's what fuck it means to me, and it is, then there is nothing that I can't say it to. I can say fuck it to absolutely anything. And it works for me, because all I'm doing is I'm just relaxing and going with it, going whatever there is.
That's a great answer. Okay, this one comes from Paul, who is also in the UK, and Paul asks, life throws up many things at us. How do you keep saying fuck it without being disheartened or giving up? That's from Antonella in the UK.
Sure. It's a very good question. And you know, again, this implies that saying fuck it is something, a kind of a way. And I've just written a book called The Way of Fuck It. But this implies that there's a kind of a way to be where suddenly everything works out and everything is okay, in the way that we traditionally think things work out and are okay. The truth is that you can give up and you can be disheartened, and this is part of life. This is the beauty of life, that some things are really shitty and rubbish and difficult to deal with, and we can really get down about it. We can get really disheartened, and we can then give up, and that in itself is a fuck it process. Fuck it is basically giving in to the flow of life and being disheartened, being down about things, and giving up on things that we thought we had to go for, giving up on a relationship, on a goal that we have, on a purpose that we might have, is part of the process. So life does throw things at us, but life—that's what life is, and that's part of the accepting of life. So, if things do get rubbish, which they often clearly do, I just kind of listen to it. The beauty of those things is that if we don't get into this thing of I must be peaceful in the face of all things that happen, I must accept and breathe deeply no matter what's happening around me. I mean, it's not like that. The truth is those things are there to create a reaction in us that then moves us. That is the flow. You know, if your boss comes in and bullies you, if your job goes really pear-shaped, if you just suddenly stop enjoying something, and it's causing you so much pain, you're not there to sit there and go, fuck it, it doesn't matter. You're not there to sit there and go, I accept things as they are and breathe. What's great there is to go, bloody hell, I'm giving up on this, I'm off. And that's fuck it. It's getting moving. It's getting moving as much as it is stopping and being still. In fact, I thought today, I did a great run this morning in the rain, and it made me think about the fact that there's quite a lot of surveys out about what's the natural things that are helping depression. And the two things that come up that are really helping depression, non-drug-wise, is meditation, so it's basically sitting still for, let's say, half an hour, and running. And I love this thing that it's either end of where most of us are. Most of us don't sit still, and most of us don't go running. So, and this really sums up a lot of what Fuck It's about for me. It's about the extremes of, and like Chinese philosophy as well, like yin and yang. So to release the endorphins, the kind of happy chemicals, in our body, in the end, to be happy, it's worth sitting still more than we otherwise would, and it's worth going for a jog or getting moving.
Yeah, they actually say that the definition of genius is the ability to hold two polar opposite thoughts in the mind at the same time and see them as one and the same thing.
I've never heard that definition of genius, and I absolutely love it, because it seems to me our very a very kind of high level of consciousness is the recognition that we are fully within the individual ego, individual within the world of me against other people and me occasionally with other people. So that's one idea of me being the ego, me being the self. But another idea, which is banded around a lot in spiritual circles, is the idea that we're all one. And this seems to me to be a profound truth, that we are all one, that I don't actually exist as an individual, that ego does not exist. It's an illusion. That's the idea. And those are two opposite ideas. And it seems to be one trick is to be able to hold, at least grasp a little bit of the idea that I don't even exist as an individual. Mind-blowing as that is.
Absolutely. Cool, that's a great answer. Now, this question comes from Jusianne in France. Hopefully I've pronounced that right. But Jusianne asks, is it easy to say fuck it to your life without the consequences? How do you do this? Is there a method?
Again, that's a good question. But kind of what we're talking about is the fact that when we recognize that there's a lot of pain in our lives and that we're kind of stuck, that making any changes, and I'm sorry to go back to the big things, but usually about changes in our working situation, in our relationships, making changes will have a consequence in our lives, and we're kind of scared of what those consequences are. But here's one thing to think about, that the consequences of sitting in something that you really don't like, in a job that you hate, or that you just about get by with, in a relationship that doesn't fulfill you, in a place that you don't like, because you think that's the way it has to be, or you're scared of an alternative, the consequences of that are probably a kind of dragged out chronic form of misery and desperation for the rest of your life, and possibly an early death, because the stress and anxiety of resistance to all the things in our life that are causing us pain, in the end will kill us. It will kill us early. Mm. What will give us a long and happy life is really relaxing and really letting go and kind of giving up on the idea that we have to do things because other people think that's how we should do them, because society says you should do it in a certain way. So that's one aspect of it. But here's a really interesting thing. That even though, let's say it's in your relationship, and it's really not working in your relationship, it's okay, but it's not completely working. You're scared of leaving the relationship because you're scared you won't find anything else. You're scared of the effect on the person that you would leave. Maybe there's family involved. What we've found in many, many situations is that when you do tune in and you trust that it's going to work out and you act from that instinctive place of, this is what I need to do, it might initially cause, of course, a little bit of hurt, or a great amount of hurt, but it tends to work out in amazing ways, not just for you, but for everybody around you. Because what people see you doing, and this is a bit of a pisser at the beginning for people, but when people see you acting from freedom, at the beginning they're jealous, or they never know they were jealous, but they are jealous, they're upset, they're often angry, because you're being free when they're not free. They're in their prison, you're being free, you're getting out of prison. But after a while, what they learn from you, the idea of freedom. So I've seen it lots of times just in relationships where one person kind of let goes and gives up on the relationship and feels a lot more free. The other person kind of hangs on for a bit and then they start to feel free and they realize they can do whatever they want. And you know what I mean? So freedom is like a virus. And it's a virus that has an initial difficult patch, but then as it spreads, everybody starts to feel it. And in my experience, everybody starts to benefit from it as well. So consequences, yeah, if you say big fuck it in your life for different things, there's going to be consequences. But there's also serious consequences if you don't do it. And the consequences can actually be benign as well in the end, in whatever you're doing. If you're expressing your own freedom from a kind of true, authentic place.
I love that concept of freedom being a virus. And just its ability to spread amongst people. And it's just a wonderful gift to give to yourself, but also like a wonderful gift to share with the people that you love most.
Yes, it is. You know, and we're so locked in this idea that and I think it's almost like a post-Christian hang-up that we believe selflessness and martyrdom is the way. You know, we almost feel a bit guilty about tuning into what we want and putting what we want first. Whereas if you look at the best healers, they'll always talk about the fact that one should concentrate on oneself first. One should heal oneself. And the natural process of healing yourself has a natural effect on healing everybody else. And, you know, the science is discovering this as well, that when you're really relaxed, you will affect people around you. You know, so all you have to do really is think about yourself. I mean, you know, different people talk about it in different ways, you know, enlightened self-interest or I don't know.
Mm.
But if you really do just go inside and sort yourself out, in the end you may go out there and do great things and charitable acts and everything else. But just relaxing, letting go, working out what you want and following that through in a kind of authentic way has a tremendous effect on everybody around you. And is healing. And we're talking about healing here at some level. It's healing for you and it's healing for everybody else too.
Mm. Absolutely. Great. So this one comes from Renee, and Renee's in Trinidad and Tobago. And Renee asks, does one get inner guidance for life's choices and find one's true purpose in life in this way?
Yes. Yes to the first half of the question in particular. So does one get inner guidance for life's choices? Well, when you do relax and tune into yourself, you will find a lot of very powerful answers. And what we found is that most people are okay at tuning in and hearing what the body is saying or what the mind is saying at a kind of authentic level. But what they're not very good at is really trusting it. So when you do tune in, when you do say fuck it to all the things that you think you should be doing and that you think people want you to do, then the inner guidance is there. In terms of choices, my sense is that one doesn't have to make too many choices in life. That it's all pretty obvious when you get there. If you do relax, there's kind of no choice. You know, when we get a lot of people who go away from here, get back into their job. And it's not that they have to sit there and work out the pros and cons of whether they stay in their job or not. They just have no choice but to leave their job. It is actually just intolerable. And the people that have made big, big decisions in their lives, they all find the same thing. Loads of people have said this to us. In fact, we've said this to other people about the decisions that we made, the choices that we apparently had. Because people say to them, oh my God, you were so brave to do that. You were so brave to go traveling. You were so brave to leave your partner. You were so brave to set that up in the middle of a recession. And they all say exactly the same thing in response, which is, I wasn't brave. I had no choice. You know, I effectively would have died if I'd have stayed in that situation. Mm. So that's the thing about guidance and choice. In terms of, she asked about finding your true purpose in life. I'm afraid I'm not so sure about the idea of purpose. the whole idea, I'm really not sure about. My sense is that there's just one eternal now, with life arising within that. So life's just kind of happening. Even we've talked about this a little bit, the idea of me is most probably an illusion. So the idea of a purpose for me is probably just an elaboration of that illusion. So my sense is don't even think about purpose. Just kind of see what there is in your life, see what's arising and move with it and move with it and move with it. Even the idea of having a big choice to make, it's not there. What do you feel like doing? Just ask yourself that, if anything. What do I feel like doing now? And then the moment later you go, what do I feel like doing now? And constantly ask that again and again and again. And your life changes naturally when you say that.
Mm, profound. Excellent. Now, this question comes from Nikki in the UK. And Nikki asks, how do you sustain the level of fuck it attitude every day?
Well, I personally don't have to sustain anything. Because I just kind of follow what's going on, whatever arises in the present, which is what I was just saying. But, so whatever's happening, whatever I feel like doing, I follow it. So in a way, the fuck it way is the place of least effort in the world. It's the laziest way in the world. That's not to say I'm lazy and I sit on the sofa eating pizza all day watching DVDs. So I might end up, I mean, I went for a run this morning. I run every other day. I do lots of things in my life. But I don't do it. I don't run, for example. I don't exercise because I think that I've got to get to a certain point, that I've got to be fit. I run because I absolutely love it. It makes me feel fully alive. And if tomorrow just the impulse to run or to exercise disappeared, then that's that. That's what I follow. If the impulse tomorrow comes up that I just want to eat burgers all the time, then that's what I'll do. The rest of the time, I'm happy to kind of eat mainly vegetarian food. So that's the idea of this. It's not something you have to sustain or you have to make any effort. It's almost the opposite. Mm. Even just having, just listening to the ideas around fuck it creates change in people where we realize that no longer do I have to resist anything. That's the idea. There's no resistance. And it's the resistance that's hard work. So non-resistance is easy and needs no sustaining. Kind of just kind of give up on the idea of having to do anything, really. That's the true way of fuck it.
It's very, very powerful. Now, John, we've actually had quite a few questions come in live as well as we've been chatting over the past 50 minutes. I'm actually just going to ask a question from Alex. And Alex in London asks, can you actually break a pattern using the fuck it methodology, e.g. breaking an addiction?
Yes, you can. I mean, you can, if you look at how fuck it works, it allows you to relax around stuff. It allows you to release on the pains and addictions in your life that you have as you're going through life. So most of us are basically dictated by a whole range of needs and desires and obligations involved in that kind of search, the search for meaning in our lives, the search for the normal meaning through the jobs and the relationships, and then a spiritual search. And if we give up on the idea that there's a place to go to and a state to be in, if we give up on the idea that I have to try to be something else in order to be worthy, if I give up on the idea that things aren't okay until I've done certain things, then you're basically cutting the ties with a lot of the things that we do that tend to feed us at the moment and whatever types of addictions they are. So the idea is you kind of just give up, I mean, and let go, and that creates huge change, including changing kind of often lifelong patterns and addictions, yes.
Mm. Awesome. Now, this question comes from Fiona in the UK. And Fiona asks, if you just say fuck it to things that you perceive to be shitty in the world, isn't that just being passive? Aren't we creators? How can you say fuck it when there are children going into gangs and carrying guns and living in poverty in your town?
Yeah, this is a really tough side of understanding what fuck it is about, because that's the temptation. I mean, people often think that fuck it is about, even the when we're talking about the idea of giving up, people imagine that you kind of give up on all the stuff that you're into, that you just go and sit around, basically. The other thing is that we give up on helping out difficult situations in the world. No, it's not about that. I mean, what it's about is it's giving up and releasing on the tension that some of those things create in us. So if I'm sitting here really angry and upset and pissed off about the terrible things in the world, it creates a huge amount of tension in me. And what a lot of us do with that tension, I've seen this myself for the last few years happening with the kind of climate change issue. When faced with the issue of bad things happening, we go into a fight or flight. So some people, and actually it's not that many people, will go out and really help and try to, they'll go out and try to help the situation. They will actually set up charities and do amazing things to help things out there. Most people will get on the flight. They feel the tension. They feel the upset about it. And they run away from it and they try to block it out. My sense is that the best way to face any of the shitty things the question mentioned the word shitty, the shitty things in the world, is to be conscious around it and inquiring around it and also inquiring about your response to it. So I say fuck it to the idea that I'm obliged to do something about shitty things in the world. I say fuck it also to any tension I may feel about that, because I know that things are as they are. That's how life is. There are great things happening in the world. There are also shitty things happening in the world. But my releasing on that tension, my accepting of those things, doesn't mean I do nothing about it. In fact, almost the opposite. If I really relax and I do come across a situation, or I become aware of a situation in the world that's shitty, and I feel something deeply about it, without feeling the tension, without feeling any obligation, I can just simply act. And the people who act from that place, from a place of non-obligation and non-tension, tend to act in a very, very powerful way. And it's been the case in my life. I seem to have done more to help other people or to get involved in charities since I started doing this stuff and giving up on the idea that I should really be contributing to charity. I've done more since I gave up on it. I mean, I really don't care what I should or I shouldn't be doing. But what do I feel like doing? And if I come across difficult situations, I will try to help. That said, I think that the question was about children in gangs and guns and everything else. I have to say, in my local town, there aren't many kids carrying knives and guns. So that's not a local situation I have to face.
Cool. Awesome. It is quite interesting that with so many things on the spiritual path, that do tend to be or appear to be paradoxical, and often just by taking the polar opposite approach, you actually, it seems to be, certainly from my experience, like a much more effortless way of actually creating the things that you really want. And it certainly, I really pick that up from you as well, John, with the whole philosophy of fuck it as well.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely true. I love this bit. There's a bit in, you know, Alice in Wonderland. The second book that Lewis Carroll wrote is called Alice Through the Looking Glass. And basically, Alice climbs through the looking glass of a living room, goes through to this mirrored world, this back-to-front world. And she goes out of the house and she sees a hill, and she wants to go to the top of this hill, I think, if I'm remembering correctly. Mm-hmm. And she starts to walk towards the top of the hill. And then she looks and she finds she's further away from the top of the hill than she was at the beginning. So then she kind of thinks, I've got to go quicker. She runs, and then she finds herself miles away from the hill. And then she kind of suffers it and realizes that in order to get to the hill, she has to walk in the opposite direction. So she starts walking away from the hill, and sure enough, within a few minutes, she's on the top of the hill, exactly where she wanted to be. Mm. And that to me sums up exactly what you talked about, the paradoxes of almost every truth. And I love this. I love this aspect that it seems to be we have some kind of perverse instinct to be running in the opposite direction of the one we should be in. You know? So the idea really is that in the end, we just kind of, it's not that we have to go anywhere and find anything. It's not that we have to do anything to be okay. it's almost as about stripping off all the crap that we've laid on ourselves over the years. Mm. You know, as kids, we were, a lot of us were kind of in a pretty pure state of just being, of just kind of existing, not wondering about what our purpose was and what we had to do to be okay. We were just there. We were just playing, basically. And I think that's pretty much the place, you know. And a kid, very young kids, don't have an idea around there's me and there's everybody else. And that is the pure thing. All there is just stuff happening. Mm. So my sense is that the answer, the greatest, the biggest answers, which is a spiritual answer, and it's also a kind of life answer. I mean, even the word spiritual, I think, puts me off in a sense, because this is about life. This is about our very lives. The answer is a lot is usually less rather than more. The answer is not to go anywhere, to do anything, to learn anything. It's not to do the Seven Steps of Enlightenment course. It's just to go, okay, this is it. there's nothing else to it. It's actually much, much, much simpler than I ever thought and than anybody could ever explain to me. There's actually not a lot to do. You can, and that's what giving up is about. We can actually all give up. It's okay now. There is nothing to do. You have nowhere to go. Because there's a pretty bloody good chance we don't even exist. And that's a wonderfully liberating thought.
Oh, I love it. Well, John, I just really wanted to take this opportunity in the sort of closing minutes of our call just to thank you wholeheartedly for sharing the profanity and the profundity of your words this evening. I know for me personally, I really resonate with your message and have personally grown as a human being this evening by being in your presence and having this conversation. And I'm sure
thank
that
you, David.
All
that's
of,
very
all,
kind. And I've really enjoyed my being with you as well. It's been a lovely chat, lovely evening.
Yeah, and I'm sure, look, all the people listening at home, John, will really resonate with your words as well. And I was just wondering if you could actually share how people can stay in touch with you and also how they can buy one of your books.
Thank you,
or indeed
yes.
Both, and also how they can actually find out more about the retreats that you run at The Hill That Breathes.
Yeah, thank you, Damon. Well, The Hill That Breathes, if you just Google The Hill That Breathes, it's actually thehillthatbreathes.com, but you Google it and you'll get straight to the site. The same with Fuck It, actually. I think if I'm just about anywhere, if you Google Fuck It, you come to the site, which is thefuckitway.com, and various different bits about us. That site also leads you on to, I do a thing on Facebook every day, and that's The Fuck It Way with the asterisk. I also tweet nowadays on Twitter, and that's The Fuck It Life. We're at The Fuck It Life. But, yeah, we got the books. Again, it's pretty easy nowadays with the technology, isn't it? Because just go onto Amazon and search for Fuck It and the original book that was out last year, and then the book that Gaia, my wife and myself, have done this year, which is a shorter book. It's just little bits of Fuck It wisdom with illustrations. So those come up, and you can buy them there. And the other exciting thing we're doing, we're doing something called the Fuck It Survival Guides, which is going to be online. It's going to be on our site, thefuckitway.com. Probably about a month's time they'll start. And these will be videos and audio things which look at various things in our lives that are difficult to survive and things that we find difficult and then answers to those specific things. For example, I'm really fat or I'm rubbish or I'm stressed. And then we spend a while looking at how Fuck It can help in those various things. But, yeah, it'd be lovely to stay in touch with people who have enjoyed the message.
Brilliant. Awesome. Now, I was just wondering, John, with the whole Fuck It brand, just what other things have you got on the agenda? Are you looking to take the work to other countries in the world with your message as well?
It's currently being, the book has been published in various places like Russia and Croatia. It looks like it's going to be published in the States next year. And we do have a lot of fans in the States already. We have lots of people on Facebook who are in the States. So the word is spreading. And I mean, I really want to spread the message of liberation through Fuck It to as large an audience as possible. So I'm aiming to set up like huge churches all over the world, and including being kind of a Fuck It evangelist on American television, and just pulling people away from these mind-fucking religions that they're so concerned, that they're so obsessed with in the States. and us getting them all into fuck it, so that to the point where we're on Oprah. So yeah, we'd like to spread the message. I am joking, of course. I don't want to do a fuck it church. But there is one thing that I am starting to do, and I'm really interested in, is using music. This is what we do at The Hill. We use for doing energy work to music, and and quite kind of active music, club music as well. So I'm starting to put together club beats with various meditations as well, and that's a passion of mine at the moment. We're doing, in fact, got a party in London, Fuck It Party, in November the 12th. So that's something I want to do. But for me, the whole process, which is what the point is of this thing, of fuck it, the fuck it idea, is to constantly tune into what I want to do, what I feel like doing. And in the end, if other people get something from that, it's really lovely. But what I love doing is thinking about this and talking about this and sharing it in various ways.
Mm, awesome. And if you had any final closing words for people who are sitting at home contemplating whether or not to adapt a fuck it lifestyle, what would you say to them?
I'd say go to bed with a cup of Ovaltine. Yeah, the main problem that most of us have is that we're knackered. We are tired out. You know, a lot of our problems can be solved just by sleeping more and napping during the day. So it's very fuck it just to kind of go, okay, I'm going to go to bed earlier every night and I'm going to try and get a nap during the day and I'm going to cancel about half the things in my diary. So for now, yeah, switch off the computer, stop looking at porn and go to bed early.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thanks, John. You've really shared a wealth of insight this evening, and I'm sure it's really opened a lot of minds all over the world. And just wanted to re-say thank you for sharing all that you have this evening.
Thank you, Damon. Thank you for having me. It's been great fun.
Cool. And also, thank you very much for everyone tuning in wherever you are in the world. We had some phenomenal questions come in this week, and as we do every week. And it's a real pleasure to actually be of service to you week to week and bring you lots of new ideas to help stimulate and expand your imagination and your way of being in the world. So thank you all for fully participating in this journey. If you would like to listen to this call again, we will be making it available free for download on the People You Should Meet website first thing tomorrow morning. So if you would like to listen to it again, by all means listen to it again and listen to it as often as you can. And also, if you actually feel as if this message could really change the life of a friend, a colleague, a family member, don't be shy in actually taking that step forward and actually sharing this profound teaching with all and sundry. So, great. So thank you everyone at home and thanks once again, John. And good evening.
Thank you, David.
Take care.
Good night.